From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, exorcisms. Here's what's happening. Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch told a U.S. senator that President Donald Trump's tweets about the judiciary are demoralizing and disheartening. In a meeting with Connecticut Democrat Senator Richard Blumenthal, Gorsuch, who's largely been silent since President Trump nominated him last week to the Supreme Court, took exception to Mr. Trump, calling a federal judge in Seattle a so-called judge after blocking the president's travel ban. Expect some kind of decision in the next few days from the Circuit Court of Appeals on this strange story. Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. John, this has got to be one of the strangest campaigns I've ever seen.
I mean, you know, you have the pick for the Supreme Court, which is a great honor, denouncing the president, basically. But think about it, how brilliant of a strategy it is by Gorsuch to weasel his way into the good graces of Dianne Feinstein and Chucky Schumer and all the libs on Capitol Hill.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, they know that they're going to have to give up the 60 votes, because if they don't, they'll go nuclear on the thing, and you'll get in anyway. So I think that they're going to kind of chum up to Gorsuch and use him as a shield to denounce Trump. That's what they're doing all over the liberal press. If you ever notice this, the most popular person in the press right now, the mainstream liberal media, is John McCain. And there was a report today by Chucky Schumer. This is front page news. That the Republican Party is afraid of Trump. They don't criticize him. I said, does this guy have an ear or eyes? Has he heard anything that McCain and Lindsey Graham and a number of the other Republican war hawks on Capitol Hill have been saying about Trump? They've been denouncing him right and left. They're not afraid to denounce him. Everybody's denouncing him. And, Trump comes out and makes some statement about, you know, how biased and, you know, I mean, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, oh, wouldn't it be great if they weren't political? Well, do you think that that's going to help your cause in the San Francisco-based, the most liberal of the appellate courts, federal appellate courts in the United States? There's three judges going to rule on this, one of whom was appointed by Jimmy Carter. Another was by Barack Obama.
Yep, and then the other by George Bush, right?
But they got 2-1 against him. And this ruling is, you know, against this across-the-board injunction that, you know, I mean, that Robart put through, James Robart in Seattle, that was on the 27th, basically staying the travel ban indefinitely until, you know, it's heard by this court. It's highly unlikely that the Ninth Court of Appeals is going to end that stay. This thing's going to probably wind up in the Supreme Court, and probably Gorsuch will get a chance to
rule on it.
You know, rule on it, yes.
Well, let me ask you this, John.
Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't the entire situation be better if somebody just grabbed the president's smartphone so he couldn't send tweets?
It's never going to happen. You know, Trump has not transitioned out of, you know, running a multi-billion-dollar real estate company. You saw how glitzy it is.
Oh, he is who he is. He hasn't changed.
He's not going to change. And it's a little different now, the transition, when you think about it, being the CEO of a company where you're essentially a dictator and an autocrat in your own business. And suddenly he has to deal with a Congress, and he's got to deal with, yes, the judicial branch of the U.S. government, which is and calling them so-called judges.
Well, and he's got to deal with us, and we're the board of directors here.
Yeah, and we love to comment about. But honestly, he's shooting himself in the foot by tweeting and shooting his mouth off and criticizing the Ninth Circuit Court, because I think they're going to rule against him.
You supported Donald Trump during the entire campaign. How do you feel right now about this entire situation?
Well, I think it's just complete theater of the absurd, and we're all watching it and enjoying it. It's more media smoke blowing than you'll ever see. More, the propaganda right now is so thick, George. The disinformation, the fake news that is being promulgated in mainstream press, mainstream broadcast media. Forget about Facebook. The fake news is occurring on a daily basis with every headline denouncing Trump. I think Trump is honestly trying to deliver on campaign promises. I think the, you know, putting Giuliani in charge, Rudy, you know, who hasn't really, you know, done any legal work per se for the last like almost 40 years, was a huge mistake. The travel ban has huge implications. The bottom line about why it doesn't work, George, is because Trump and the Justice Department that he represents now with Jeff Sessions cannot demonstrate any connection with any immigrant or any visitor from those seven countries or a host of other countries that are part of known terror groups. So until somebody's committed a violent act, a terrorist act, you can't convict somebody and, you know, modify your immigration laws and constitution to fit the kind of paranoia that went on in, you know, the 2016 race, where every, you know, everybody's whipped into a frenzy about, you know, domestic terrorism. And most of those terrorist acts, by the way, were U.S. citizens, or they had legal status somehow.
That's right. And also, most of the terrorists during 9/11 were Saudis.
Yes.
Saudi Arabia is not part of those seven countries.
Well, of course not.
Yeah. All right, John.
Okay.
Onlinecolumnist.com is his website. The United States and European terror forecast for 2017 looks alarming, in part because of increased pressure on ISIS and other terror groups on their home turf. According to an assessment by House lawmakers, the House Homeland Security Committee, in their terror threat snapshot report, cited two homegrown terror attacks in January, and officials predicted efforts to crush foreign terror groups will spur more attacks on American soil. They're concerned about that. Iran launched another missile from the same launch pad east of Tehran, where it conducted a previous ballistic missile test last month. They're starting to flex their muscles. And China and Iran, two countries at top President Trump's lists of questionable enemies here, are pushing back against his tough talk this week with showy and provocative military drills. Iran, of course, conducted military exercises, rolling out new weapons that its leaders said would help national defense. And China tested a new missile following Mr. Trump's Twitter assault on Beijing's expansion in the South China Sea. Let's check in with Dr. Jerome Corsi from Infowars.com. Jerry, your take on China and Iran. What's going on here?
Well, both China and Iran are ramping up their military threats and their military capabilities. I think the Iran is very seriously threatening because of the ability to launch a missile on Tel Aviv, which Iran, you know, keeps talking about, and certainly is going to threaten Israel. With regards to China, China's real concern is the South China Sea, and they want that. That's the ocean off of Vietnam, and it's a major source of influence that China wants to have control over.
Mm-hmm, they sure do.
And I think we're going to have to deal with China, both with China and Russia, which are exercising kind of the typical state spheres of influences that go back to, you know, diplomacy in the Metternich era, which was, you know, which was really the 1820s through the 1840s. And remember, Kissinger wrote his dissertation on Metternich. Metternich's idea was that you have balance of powers. And by the way, he's the one who parked Napoleon, Metternich, in Corsica. He was the end of Napoleon's career, was very successful in the rise of Austria. My point is that, you know, we probably don't want to go to World War III over the South China Sea.
No.
We don't want to go to World War III over Russia and Crimea. We're going to have to accept that both Russia and China is extending its influence all through Africa. It's extending its influence in Latin America.
Well, however, though, Jerry, can World War III happen over these regions?
Yes, that's the real danger. I think, George, you identified it. If we continue to, you know, be confrontational towards China and Russia over issues like Ukraine and Crimea or the South China Sea, yes, then it could ramp up into a serious military attack. And there's a report out tonight that China has targeted our military bases with this new DF-16 missile in Japan is probably accurate. You know, the idea that we need to have a massive U.S. military presence in Japan has got to be rethought in an era where China is going to compete with Japan in the next 50 years for dominance over Asia.
Well, I pray that everything works out, Jerry, but it's going to be a tough one. Track Dr. Corsi's work at Infowars.com. Newly discovered radiation levels in one of the Fukushima power plant's reactors are stunningly high. The space is so radioactive that even a robot could not last 2 hours, let alone a human, they say. It was on March 11, 2011, that the coastal power plant in Japan's Fukushima area was hit by a tidal wave, which not only cut off the plant's electrical power, but also took out the generators that provided its backup power. The natural disaster triggered the meltdown of three reactors at the plant. We're going to look more into this story. Thousands of dead and dying bees are washing up on a popular beach in southern Florida. Naples beachgoers had to watch where they stepped after some people said that they had been stung just along the shoreline. They have no idea how or why these bees are washing up on shore. Researchers have discovered a new cave in Israel where they say once held Dead Sea Scrolls, making it just the 12th such cave of its kind ever found. The find in this milestone, according to a new Hebrew University of Jerusalem report, says it's absolutely staggering. The cave was looted, however, long before the archaeologists excavated it, but inside they did find signs that scrolls had been there. It's too bad they're gone. I wonder who has them. Up next, we're going to be talking about contemporary Casey, the life of Edgar Casey, the late American prophet, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Kevin Todeschi back with us, Executive Director and CEO of Edgar Casey's ARE, the Association for Research and Enlightenment, and the Atlantic University. Kevin is both student and teacher of the Casey material for 40 years, a very prolific writer. He's the author of more than 25 books. His most recent book, Contemporary Casey, is an overview of the Casey material in really easy-to-understand language. Kevin is also a nationally recognized resource on the interpretation of dreams. If we have time during phone calls, we might be able to do some of that for you. And here he is back on Coast to Coast. Kevin, looking forward to this. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me on the program, George.
How are things at the Caseyville?
Actually, things are going great. Since the last time you and I spoke, we've renovated the entire site, added a new addition, have a restaurant. You and I actually spoke years ago about the possibility of broadcasting Coast to Coast from ARE one time. I think it'd be fun.
We got to work on that. I'll get with Tom on that, because that organization that you head up is, I think, one of the greatest ever. And the Casey stories are just amazing.
Yeah, it's an amazing work, and we have lots of new things happening. We have our university has two accredited online master's degrees, one in transpersonal psychology, another in mindful leadership. We've got more than 125 programs on our YouTube channel. In fact, it's because of a surge of younger people who have found an interest in the Casey readings, looking for easy ways to understand it, that Henry Reed and I wrote Contemporary Casey, which is really an overview of 24 of the major topics, describing them without using any of Casey's language or reading.
He was born in Kentucky in 1877. He died in 1945. He was called the Sleeping Prophet. But for a lot of people who, you know, maybe younger and they don't know who Casey was, give us a little highlight of him, Kevin.
Sure. For 43 years of his adult life, he was able to put himself to sleep on a couch. We actually have the couch on our tour in the library. With his eyes closed, his wife would sit next to him, could ask him a question, or she could give the name of a patient, and he could tune into that person, describe what was wrong with them, describe how they could get well, recommend certain doctors to go to. He could answer any question he was asked, anything from where can I dig for fishing worms to what is the purpose of my life. And over 43 years, the Casey database is an amazing compilation of 24 million words. So Casey talked about 10,000 different topics. And that's why there's several hundred books about him, because the topical range is just amazing. Whether it's health or how reincarnation works, or how can I meditate, or how can I improve a relationship, or how can I discover my past lives, there's resources there because people just like you and I ask Edgar Cayce for answers.
Did Edgar Cayce have this gift when he was at a younger age?
A smaller version of it. He was able to sleep on his school books when he was just about 8 or 9 and memorize their contents. Now, that is a real handy thing to do for, like, geography or social studies.
Oh, yeah.
English. It doesn't help you solve a math problem if the answer is not in the book. But he could, you know, sleep on something and have a photographic memory of its contents. And, in fact, when he was a young man, he actually got a job at a bookstore because they said they didn't need anybody, but he slept on their inventory, and he knew it better than anybody in the store. So that was one of his early gifts.
His health readings are just spot on, so much so that I've got one of the books on Cayce and his health readings, and, you know, I go through that regimen all the time, Kevin, you know, the 3 almonds a day and everything else. I mean, it's truly remarkable what he did.
It's an A to Z encyclopedia. In fact, I really got involved early on when I had just, in high school, I had such a problem with allergies that I would get 3 allergy shots a week. But by working with the Cayce information, I don't even take pills anymore. And, you know, people can go to edgarcayce.org, and we have several hundred of his health concerns up there that they can look up in the Cayce database and see what he suggested doing for those problems.
There's one prediction that he has made that hasn't happened yet, and I stress the word yet, and that is the geographical look of North America in the future. Where, you know, the west coast of the United States could very well be Missouri.
Well, I've never been a proponent of that prediction, but let me give a little more information on that. He actually had he was in Detroit, and he had been giving readings for people who needed help. He was arrested and put in jail.
For what?
For practicing medicine without a license. And he was depressed to the depths of his soul because he felt like he was doing a work that was helpful to people. And finally, his son and a judge got him out of jail, and traveling back on the train, still depressed, wondering, should I keep doing this? He had a dream. And in the dream, he was born again in Nebraska, which was the west coast in the dream. And it was 100 years in the future. And scientists were still studying Edgar Cayce's work, and there were evidence of his work all over. And he had a reading given on that dream. And he asked in the reading, you know, what is this about? And the reading said, though the heaven and earth be removed, your work will survive. In other words, it was not about the West Coast being Nebraska, but instead that no matter what happened in the outer world, like being arrested for practicing medicine without a license, his work would survive. So that's really what that was about, not so much outer events, but his inner turmoil and the fact that he needed just to have the faith and go on.
Is it true that his readings and the intensity of the readings wore him down to the point where he died?
It did. It's actually what happened was there used to be a national magazine that brought out a story about him, and it was during early part of World War II, and this magazine became so popular. It was kind of like the Look magazine of the day.
Of that era, yeah.
Yeah, but people wrote in. It was called Coronet. People wrote in asking for readings, and then a short time later, his biography came out. And his readings had told him to give 2 readings a day, that one in the morning, one in the afternoon, because it was like plugging his fingers or his body into a high-charged electrical field. And he told his secretary that there were so many people needing help. They had 8, 9, 10 bags of mail delivered by the post office every day, that he told her to book them in advance 8 a day so he could help these people. So eventually he had a stroke in the fall of 1944. He died in January 1945. And when he died, his secretary had booked 8 readings a day 2 years in advance, trying to help get caught up.
He was relatively young, too, wasn't he? He was
only 66.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
His youngest son lived to be 93, so it wasn't, you know, it wasn't necessarily in the gene pool, but he did wear himself out giving readings.
When we come back, Kevin, I want to talk more with you about end times prophecy, of course, and you wrote a book called The Best Dream Book Ever, I want to talk about that, and then when we take phone calls next hour, questions, of course, but if somebody has a dream, maybe you can interpret it for us. That would be interesting indeed. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Kevin Tedeschi with us as we talk about the life of Edgar Cayce. We'll talk about some dreams, too. And, Kevin, I understand that the ARE is giving our listeners a 25% discount for memberships.
They are, absolutely. They can go there, edgarcayce.org, and not only a 25%, so they can be a member for $44 a year, get our magazine, but they'll get a free astrological profile just by going to the homepage.
That's great. And I've got to tell you, his readings were spot on for a lot of things that could still help people today, aren't they?
Absolutely. I mean, the information is just as relevant today, whether you're having a health problem or want to work with relationship, or you need help meditating, or you want to work on your psychic ability. I mean, the magic to the readings, as far as I'm concerned, is that regular people ask the questions of how they could get help, and some of those human needs and desires are very similar to what we have today, and so that's why the information is so helpful.
What did he say about end times, Kevin?
Well, I think his description of end times is different than what a number of people might think. Mm-hmm. He's not talking about the end of the world. He's instead talking about the end of an age. And I think we are in what he would call end times, the end of an age. And he would describe it as rather being so focused on our individual pursuits, wanting to make money, wanting to be a success, in terms of countries, wanting to be predominant over other countries. He would say that in the end, which he said is our destiny, we will be a very different world. It'll be basically a world that is very concerned with everybody on the planet. We will have a focus on our responsibility toward one another. He predicted that the time would come, and I don't believe I'll see it in my lifetime, but he predicted the time would come when every individual would become aware of its connection to the divine, that we would have 1,000 years of peace on earth, that we would be responsible for one another. He called this the age of purity, and that the lily would become a symbol for it. But I don't see that happening anytime in the next 20, 30 years.
How close did he echo the Book of Revelation?
He actually gave readings for 10 years on the Book of Revelations, and this is a real mind-bender. He said it is not about external world events or the ends of the world, but instead it is a symbolic overview of what happens when an individual's lower self is at war with their higher self as the higher self tries to reign supreme. So the wars, the struggles, the beasts are all internal processes. The seven books are associated, he would say, with the seven spiritual centers. And the interesting thing about his interpretation, which, I mean, there's dozens of readings about it, one of the things he points out is in the Revelations there's a sea of glass, and out of the sea of glass, which is right next to the throne of God, there arises four beasts, the eagle, the man, the lion, and the calf. And interestingly enough, hundreds of years earlier in the Old Testament, the prophet Ezekiel has a vision where he sees a whirlwind. And in the whirlwind, it is like four faces appear in the whirlwind, and those four faces are the face of an eagle, the face of a man, the face of a lion, and the face of a calf. And Cayce suggested that what happens when the kundalini rises along the spiritual centers is it kind of awakens symbolism associated with the body. And the lowest spiritual center, the gonads, the symbol is the calf. The next one, the adrenals, the symbol is a lion. The next one, the thymus, the symbol is an eagle. I skipped over the leidig, which is the symbol of a man. So that basically it's an internal process. And he goes through the whole book, chapter and verse. He separates the, which I can do with you, but he separates all the various chapters into what it's about. Early on, when John's writing letters to the churches, it's about really personal assessment, coming to terms with what we need to change within ourselves. So from Cayce's premise, the Book of Revelation is not about the end of the world. Most people kind of look at me funny when I say this, but the word Antichrist is not even in the Book of Revelation.
That's right. That is
true. The word Antichrist is only mentioned in epistles to John, and it's not about some diabolical demon. It's simply a phrase that's used where people say, you know what, the Messiah is not Jesus. They're anti-Christ. They don't believe Jesus is the Messiah. So the Book of Revelations is not what most people think it is. It's a symbolic overview, much like a dream. When we have a dream, it's about what's going on inside of us, not what's going on in the outside world.
And the old saying about karma, what goes around comes around. What did Casey say about karma?
Interesting insight there as well. From his premise, for the most part, karma is memory that we have. I mean, the way I usually describe this is if you have a friend or a spouse or someone in your family and you have an encounter with that person, very often your memory of the experience is very different than the other person. And sometimes you might be describing it to someone and the person's with you and say, wait a minute, that's not what happened. So we retain our own memories. Casey would say our karmic memory is basically our own memory of whatever happened with this person, our own experiences. And it may be very different than the memory shared by that other person. So when we have a karmic memory experience, or we reawaken karma, what we're really trying to heal is our own personal memory, not so much the relationship with that other person.
Kevin, let's talk a little bit, if we can, a couple more things about Casey. Then I want to talk about your work in the dream interpretation world, which is fascinating too. With everything that you know about Edgar Casey, what would you say is the single most important thing that you have learned from him?
Well, it would be a hard, that'd be a hard question, but what I can tell you is that when Henry and I pulled together Contemporary Casey, what we did was we kind of summarized the 14,000 readings into what we think is most important. So I would say that Casey suggests we have the capacity to improve our own health. He suggests that our individual relationships at home, at work, everywhere are really our personal laboratory and soul growth. The reading suggests that we have an innate ability to obtain personal guidance in many different ways. The reading suggests that all of us have the ability through attunement, such as prayer and meditation, to come to an understanding of our relationship with God. A lot of the readings talk about how changes in our life are really at the core of promoting personal changes within ourselves. They also suggest that we are loved by the Creator and that as beings we are eternal. But when I'm doing an elevator speech, someone sees me on the elevator and says, well, what are the readings are all about? I usually use this tagline. They're about the oneness of God. There's only one God, regardless of how we call that being. The spiritual nature of humankind. We're essentially physical beings having spiritual beings having a physical experience. They're about the purposefulness of life, that whatever's going on in our life right now can be purposeful if we just choose to let it so. And it's about the connection of body, mind, and spirit. But for me, the thing I've learned over the years is that we can heal any problem, any memory, or any relationship.
Now, you wrote a book called The Best Dream Book Ever. Tell me about your work in dream interpretation.
Well, I may have told you the story before, but it started many years ago when I first got involved in a study group. As you know, we have ecumenical study groups all over the country studying Casey's information on soul growth. And this group, I was the youngest member of this group. I was still a teenager, and they were in their 40s, and they always seemed so much wiser than me. And every 6 months, they would ask for a dream as a group. They'd all write down the same question, a dream, and they'd go dream on it and then come back and share it with the group. And I had never heard of such a thing, and I didn't know if I could remember a dream. And so I had some level of performance anxiety. But the question the group decided to work on is, what do I need to work on spiritually? So this is how my whole dream career began. So I wrote down the question, what do I need to work on spiritually? And the goal was to read it before you go to bed several times and then wake up and write down your dream. And I woke up the next morning, I couldn't remember a dream, and I was getting worried, you know, I'll be the only one in this group of 14, 15 people without a dream. So the next night, I read it over and over and over again, tucked it under my pillow, and this is the dream I had. I dreamed that I was in Egypt, and I had never been in Egypt. Mm-hmm. ARE tours all over the world, so since then I've been 6 times. But I was in Egypt, and I was with an ARE group of about 50 people, and I was coming out of the Great Pyramid at Giza. And when you come out of the pyramid, there's a great big Giza plateau. And just as I stepped out of the pyramid, somebody in the group said really loud, by the way, Jesus taught Kevin some dance steps, and Kevin wants to show them to you now. And I was kind of shocked because I didn't know anything about dancing, and I didn't know anything about meeting Jesus. But all these people gather around, start sitting down by the pyramid to watch me. And as I'm getting ready to do something, I think, you know, maybe I can come up with something. I want to be a team player. Somebody I didn't care for, an ARE, walked by and sat down and excused the language. But when I saw that person, I thought, oh, what an ass. And the person sat down. And as soon as I thought that, I looked out, and there on the other edge of the desert was Jesus. And he thought back, more than anything else, you need to work on your thoughts. And I woke up the next day blown away. I had written, what do I need to work on spiritually? And from the big guy himself, I got work on your thoughts. And from that day forward, I began working with dreams. And I have spoken on 5 continents, written 3 books, interpreted thousands of dreams. So it just became a real love of mine.
Does everybody dream every night?
Everybody dreams every night. Our challenge in the Western world is we're not culturally predisposed to work with our dreams, but most of us have 6 dream cycles of about 15 minutes apiece. And even if we don't remember our dreams, they can be helpful. So let's say you go to bed anxious or frustrated or worried about something, and you wake up and the next day you feel refreshed. Casey would say that the dreams have contrasted and correlated the events of the day and given us some kind of resolution. So even not remembering them, they can be helpful. But when you remember them, they can be even more helpful.
Lucid dreaming, clairvoyant dreams, a number of different kinds of dreams that are out there. And they each have their own importance, don't they, Kevin?
Absolutely. And they come at various times in our life. We can get insights to a problem, health insights, relationship guidance, insights into our finances, psychic experiences, visions, out-of-body experiences. Like you say, lucid dreaming, which is the phenomenon of knowing you're dreaming while you're dreaming and being able to change the content of it.
I use my dreams to accomplish things, and I'll just tell you a little technique of what I do. Whatever I want to do or get done, and let's assume that it's not happening as fast as I want or happening at all, I'll go to sleep and think about that person who has that ability to make it happen with us or the event itself. And then I just go to bed, and I think that when I'm in my dream state or sleeping, memorize it or not, that it's working for me, that it's solving problems, and it seems like 9 out of 10 times, it seems to work.
Absolutely. I think what happens is, you know, we have different levels of our own consciousness, and so we have a conscious mind, a subconscious mind, and a superconscious mind. And the subconscious is what comes awake when we daydream or when our mind wanders. But the superconscious mind is actually our personal connection to the Akashic Records. And when we get into a sleep state, very often we tune into information that's there. We have a problem and we can solve it. And not only that, but, you know, Edgar Casey got his information from the Akashic Records, which is actually our connection via the superconscious mind.
And explain the Akashic Records.
Sure. It's basically the universe's database of everything that's ever transpired in the earth in terms of the past, but it also keeps track of probable futures. If George does this, this is the outcome. If George does that, that's the outcome. And sometimes when we sleep, we can tune into those possible futures. And so what very often happens is we go to sleep, and the next day we're going somewhere, and we think, wait a minute, I've already been to this place. Or we're having a conversation with someone, we think, wait a minute, I've already had this conversation. And we have a experience we call deja vu, but what actually is happening is we're having fragmentary dream recall. We dreamed about it the day before, but because we don't write down our dreams, we don't remember that we dreamed it. But many experiences of deja vu are simply us tapping into the Akashic Records of the future and getting insights into what's going on in our life.
Last year, and I go every year to Joshua Tree, California, for Contact in the Desert. It's a weekend-long event.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, I had maybe 5 or 6 different episodes of deja vu. It was uncanny. Kevin, it got to the point where it was a little uncomfortable because it would happen so often. You know, I was, you get that feeling, I know what this person's going to say, I know what's going to happen, and sure enough, and it happens. But it was the weirdest feeling. Could it be because of the environment where it was?
Absolutely. I think especially if you get out of your normal routine in any way, we become much more prone to unusual experiences because we're not so caught up in the way things generally happen to us. I mean, and as you know, I mean, we're much more than our physical body. I mean, we are an extended sense of consciousness that's walking around in a physical body. And lots of that comes to the forefront when we get out of our routines.
It was really strange. I mean, and then as soon as I got out of the area, went away.
Yeah. You know, one of my favorite stories about dreams that are in the Casey database, there was a... this happened in the 1970s, and so this is before the internet, before computers, before, I mean, if you want to get here information from Australia, it wasn't so much a phone call, it was a letter. And there was a woman in Australia, ARE member, who was in a study group, and she was having a horrible series of problems. Been to doctors, hadn't been able to help. She had stomach problems, she had liver problems, she always had gas, she couldn't eat things, she didn't feel well, she had problems sleeping. And she'd been to so many doctors, she was depressed and told one of her study group members that sometimes she even thought about committing suicide. And the woman told her, well, why don't you ask for a dream? So she wrote down, I need a dream for my health. And that night she had a dream, and Edgar Casey came to her and gave her a piece of paper with a number on it numbered 1880. And she woke up, and the best she could think of, well, maybe it's a reading. So she wrote to Virginia Beach and said, is there a reading number 1880? And they mailed it back to her, there was. And she started reading it, and it blew her away because the man who had got the reading described the same problem she had. Gas problems, stomach problems, couldn't get sleep, always not feeling well, didn't know what was wrong with him. And the person was diagnosed by Casey as having a mercury poisoning.
Wow.
And he outlined a regimen of treatment, and the person got well. So the woman went to her doctor and said, is it possible I could have mercury poisoning? And her doctor said, no, that would not be very possible, but he could test for it. She called her mother and said, is it possible I could have mercury poisoning? And her mother told her when she was 3 years old, she had bitten off the end of a thermometer and swallowed its contents.
And it was still in her system.
And it was still in her system. She started following the Casey treatment. She got well within 3 months, and it was all from a dream.
How dramatic. Dramatic indeed. Kevin, we're going to take a quick break. We're at the top of the hour, but we are going to come back and take your phone calls, of course, questions about Edgar Casey, and also if you want a dream interpretation, we're going to have Kevin do that too on Coast to Coast AM. Don't forget, by the way, to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. I sent out a couple tweets tonight, as a matter of fact. Just go and sign up by going to coasttocoastam.com. And, of course, you can always email me at george@coasttocoastam.com.